The sponsor of our show today is CNE Wildlife. CNE Wildlife partnered up with North American Deer Talk. We're incredibly grateful for that. If you get a chance or an opportunity, say thank you to them. And the reason is really simple. They have 30 years of commitment to all natural probiotics. This commitment's really a passion for them. And they've established that through university research at Texas Tech. Whether that be their fawn paste, their top score product, their show choice, farm pack, all the various products they have, they really provide a service and a set of products that helps your herd thrive. Give Sadie a call over there at CNE and order up some good stuff. We think you'll like it. We know we do. We've been product users for almost 15 years now. We feel it's the best around. So get you some CNE Wildlife today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of North American Deer Talk. I have a guest hailing from the Cheesehead State, Wisconsin, Mr. Ryan Rodenkirk. Ryan, how are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, my pleasure. Is it really the Cheesehead State? I'm sure you've heard that.
Yep. Yeah, okay. Cheese and beer.
Cheese and beer. So when the auction circuit was more popular is not the right word, but like back in the day, I swear my favorite people to hang out with were people from Wisconsin, because you boys like to drink some beers. And
it's always nice when we go to an auction place. It's always warmer than it is here.
There is that. No, I have fond memories of guys that have now been gone out of the business, and of course they were from Wisconsin, and I've drove from Pennsylvania to Wisconsin. I don't know how many times going to visit farms, and I think my first trip up there was it was like 2004 or five.
Okay.
And yeah, it was a while ago, and it was August. It was August 5th. I drove up to Gary and Jane Nelson's, and Iron Mountain. Yeah. All the way up there. And so we get up there, I wake up, we pulled in at like 3 a.m. We just parked in their driveway. I hop in a sleeping bag in my truck, 'cause it's cold. Right. We wake up, it's 34 degrees. It's August 5th. And we're like, what is going on up here?
That's Wisconsin for you.
No doubt.
80 or snowing the next day.
Yeah. But that was a good trip. We did like 3,000 miles in like 4 days and hit a bunch of folks on the way back. And it was just really cool. So anyway, I'm glad you could join me today. I wanted to just kind of catch up with you. The last time that you were on the podcast was 2015. That was the inception year. That was a long time ago.
Yeah, it was. And I think, what was that, back in Cincinnati?
It was at French Lick.
Oh, was it? Okay. I think so. It was one of the two.
Yeah, it was. That might have been the first time we were at French Lick. And I remember moving them big office chairs in my room and recording a podcast.
That was a long time ago.
It was. So I wanted to get you back on after all that time, because a ton's changed, right? And the industry's changed. We've all changed. And I wanted to run through a bit of your personal history in the deer world, you know, where you started, and just kind of walk us through that, because I think it's an interesting story.
Yeah. Yeah. So graduated from high school in 2008. I went to the University of Stevens Point, Wisconsin, after that, and I was majoring in wildlife and biology. Part of my degree, I actually had to do an internship to obtain it. So the first summer, I figured, I'll get it out of the way. Then the next couple summers, I can work and pay my student loans, all that. Well, I ended up taking an internship with Brad and Robbie Peterson in Katy, Texas. So I spent the summer bottle feeding fawns, kind of learning the entire industry, you know, dart and bucks. They weren't a very big operation, but it kind of allowed me to get hands-on and start learning some of the animal health. And after that, I didn't go get another job. I went back down there every summer after that, really just kind of getting more in depth. So in 2013, I graduated from Stevens Point. And I jumped right on as manager of Apple Creek here in Wisconsin with their breeding program, which, you know, at times was well over 1,000 animals. So I got to dabble in the big part of the game and really, really then dive into animal health and nutrition, all of that. I got to see the hunting end of it as well. And then in 2016, I jumped off and I started my own herd, Rodenkirk Whitetails and Genetics. I had a family farm located in southeast Wisconsin that I started with my father. We originally started with, you know, 9 girls and 5 acres of pens, and now we're up to about 10 acres and have roughly about 100 animals right now. And that's kind of where we're at and chugging along. So I think we're in year 6 of that and everything's going pretty good for the most part.
Now, where's your family farm located?
Beaver Dam, Wisconsin.
Where is that in the state?
Yeah, I'm about 30 minutes northeast of Madison and about an hour west of Milwaukee.
You'd like to be further away from Madison, wouldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. For multiple reasons.
Sure. Gotcha. That's cool. So that's farm ground, right? Like that's
Exactly. I took old corn ground and put up deer pens. My grandpa purchased the farm in 1979. So it's been in our family that long. And, you know, we kind of got to the point where it was like, well, you know, we can sacrifice 9 acres and make X amount of dollars or get $200 an acre for corn, you know? So it made sense to do. And I thankfully had been in the game long enough. I had learned a lot of mistakes and learned what to do, what not to do, and how I wanted to set my program up rather than just jumping in. And you know, even to the genetics, I picked out specific animals that I wanted. I went out and purchased them, and I still have, you know, a large number of my original does I purchased. So,
well, let's talk about those, because that's my favorite thing to do. I love talking
pedigree. Absolutely. So, you know, my super doe, her name's Ruthie. She is a slick 2028 double wides womb. The worst thing about Ruthie, I can't get a daughter out of her to save my life. She is 10 years old this summer, and she actually just had me twin bucks out of Navigator. I threw an SS buck in her with a good GBV, and you would have swore I would have had 2 doe fawns by what I was saying when I picked them up. I have never been more mad to have twin bucks ever. But what do you do? I mean, that's
deer the bucks
alive and healthy. So.
Yeah. How about some female semen?
That's actually what I was starting to look into. I don't know.
Well, don't waste time, because she's 10.
Track down. Yeah, I'm looking, you know, FedEx, Voodoo Magic, something with that big frame, good values on them.
Mm-hmm.
Get away from the GGs.
Yeah, it's important, you know, and the reality is, especially, you know, in Wisconsin, as CWD's been there for, you know, we're 20 years now, right?
Absolutely. You know, and we're standing on the front line. I mean, this last spring, the DNR outright said, we expect we have 50,000 wild positives walking around right now. 50,000. I mean, that's
a big number.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I double fenced my farm right away. Not that that's a cure all, but when I started 2016, I was 27 miles away from wild positive. Last spring, I was down to 7. Which tells me it's probably right there, you know. Sure. But what can I do to protect it? Well, now it's, you know, breeding the genotypes, the GEBVs, you know, really watching who's around, who's going in my pens, what vehicles are even showing up at the farm, all that biosecurity stuff, which is something I think a lot of us need to really start looking at a little bit more.
Yeah, and it was, I know that Wisconsin participated in the study that Dr. Schultz and Dr. Wells did out of Minnesota, and you and I were on on those calls as part of that stakeholder group. And it was you know, the findings, you know, some of it was kind of like common sense stuff that you just know, but like there was a few other things that I think we all kind of looked at and we're like, like one of them happened to be bedding.
Yeah.
And I thought that was odd. Now, I don't use, outside of having fawns on, you know, bedding for 2 weeks when I bring them into the barn, if I'm bottle feeding, I don't use bedding at my place. Some people do.
Yeah.
But like that had a 67% correlation to positive, non-positive farms.
Absolutely.
Now why? Who knows, right? But like it did.
Well, and I from my understanding is they're going to take that a step further, and he's going to do some further biosecurity stuff as well, which I think is much needed. It's something that we really overlook. I mean, I've helped a number of people get into it, and it's something that they don't even think about. You know, where's your ATV been? You know, where's your truck been?
Yeah,
where has there been a dead deer in that? You know.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, when you start and you know, your area, like we have CWD in our state. It's not like Wisconsin. You know, we're 10 years lagging on that, probably 12. But it's still significant. But like, if you think about it, like all your interactions on a daily basis, you know, CWD out in the wild, you know, you run over a dead deer that, you know, the prions pick up on your tires and you drive it into your driveway. You don't even think about it. Right.
Exactly.
Or you're putting yourselves in these situations where the potential is there, you know, and there's so much that we don't know. But that study, I think, is interesting. And I hope that phase two can provide us with a little bit of red meat where we can have a document and say, hey, members of WOW or PDFA, like, check this out. This is something that you should look at and consider.
Inform yourselves of it.
Right. So back to Ruthie, because we can talk CWD all day. And I do want to talk about it, but not yet.
Yep.
So we got to get some girls out of her.
Yep.
Absolutely. Like, you don't have any does?
I've got one girl from a live breeding from 2016. Another guy here in Wisconsin has a girl named Goody, which is a big Stitch daughter. He has her at his place. Only two girls around, you know, and Goody's a full sister to my Buck Bad company.
Gotcha.
Which is Big Stitch on top of Ruthie's, essentially a three-quarter brother to Blackjack. Mm-hmm. Been a great producer for me. I think the smallest two-year-old I had was 193, but they look good.
Yep.
You know, they're not just these big lopsided, you know, typical deer farm deer, you know, what the public thinks. So I've been very blessed. I bred with her son, Robbie, who was a FedEx son again last year.
He's real clean, right? That's the real clean one.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, he was 215 with 195-inch frame on him. And cool. he had a great GEBV. He was -0.1133, I believe.
Oh, sweet. I will just for those listening, I'll get a couple of pictures from Ryan. I'll drop those in the show notes. You guys can stare at what stare at what he's talking about. So outside of Ruthie, you know, what else is kind of at the core of your program?
So you had to pick something else. Non-typical side, I have a girl named Diamond. She is a jumbo danger hardcore daughter. Thankfully, I've got a number of daughters out of her. She produced a buck. I have called Outlaw. He was he jumped up to 480 last year. But I have multiple sons from her. I have a really, really nice Justify 2 year old coming up, and a really big major league yearling coming as well. Just can tell by that mass, you know, and they have that 8-9 inches of mass. They're going to be big. So
when you look at those, obviously you have like two distinct lines, and have you, you know, outside of regulatory concerns and those pressures being placed on your farm affecting your economics, you know, what are you hearing from your hunt ranches that you're providing the seed stock to stock? Like, they're looking for classic deer. They looking for some non-typicals, you know, is there a shift?
All of my buyers, they want that 200 to 300 inch. You know, of course they always want the ones underneath, but economically, that just doesn't make sense for us as breeders. But it's, you know, once they kind of get over that 300, it seems like it's a select market over here. You know, you could make a bunch of extra money, or you could get docked and, you know, sell a 320 the same as a 200 in order to get rid of it. But that's kind of my sweet spot. My goal with my program is 200 inches at two. And if they're not breeding, they're out the door. And that's really, you know, I don't like having 4 and 5 year olds. You know how they get there.
They kill each other.
I'm not even interested in breeding. They just want to fight. Yep. And it doesn't serve a purpose for me. I just don't have the space to have those kind of numbers either. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Our farms are very similar as far as our footprint goes and,
yep.
and how we can manage. I don't have the space to keep older deer, and like that space needs to be significant.
Yep.
You know, they're fine over the summer. But you know, come middle of September and October, like it's game on. And
exactly.
Yeah. It's not worth it. You lose one and like, it destroys your balance sheet.
It does. Yep. Yep. It throws them all into chaos. And you know, one of the big things I like my non-typical breeders for it, and I guess I'm probably a little different than most, is I like taking my big non-typical and breeding them to first time girls. And the reason I do that is because I'm hoping for buck fawns, and I'm stamping out production in her first go around to say, hey, she threw me a 230 inch, you know, 2 year old. She's good to go.
Right.
That's kind of how I use them. Or some girls that need a little bit of push if they're only throwing me those 180 stuff like that.
Gotcha. Yep. That makes sense. So when you I know you have a little bit of, you know, Southern blood that you've kind of worked into your herd, you know, being from Wisconsin, obviously, much like I am here, like having a robust body is important just to weather Absolutely. The winter. Right. Are you pretty careful about your percentage of Southern blood that you bring in or
maybe I really don't want more than 30% Southern. Otherwise, you know, that body size just seems to really, really go down. You know, I do have a couple of FedEx Sons, Outlaw and Robbie, I've used. Thankfully, they've kind of carried that northern body through. I mean, Outlaw's a back problem. You know, yeah. You go lift him up and it's like, just go get the Bobcat. Let's put him in the bucket. So
nothing, no effect on him at all.
Not overly, no, nope. And that's he's passing his body size down. I actually had a farmer out last fall and I had an older buck and with a bunch of buck fawns. He goes, hey, who's that yearling in there with that older buck? That's a buck fawn.
Yeah, nice.
So
no, it's good.
It's something to be careful of. They can say what they want, but those Southern genetics definitely play a role in body size reduction up here.
Yeah. No, we've seen that over here. I've been anti-Southern.
Yep.
Until this year. And it's just because we get back into the CWD conversation.
Yep.
We don't have enough testing done as far as codon markers and GBV for CWD susceptibility. So like the pool to pick from is relatively limited.
Yep.
And the pool that I wanted to select from is even smaller because like I wanted a very specific animal and they don't exist.
Yeah.
Cause I'm too picky. So I am picky no more. I want to stay in business. I want to be a deer farmer.
Absolutely.
So you say to yourself, what's important to you? Do you want to breed with deer that, that violate your breeding criteria? You bet. Yep. I'm going to, because I want to keep breeding deer. I'll figure it out in the years to come, right? When we have more selection as far as different bucks and stuff like that. So
exactly.
Yeah, I always the body thing always interests me because it's noticeable, right?
Yeah, and it's I can tell on my end when, you know, right now our northern deer, orange coats, nice and slicked out.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have some that they kind of stay gray. they're kind of ghostly and ghostly gray. I guess it's kind of how I explain it. And too much Texas in there.
Yeah.
The time to breed back to the north.
It's yeah, that's interesting. Cause like I was out this morning. It was a beautiful morning here. I was looking at some of those does, and we just had a good amount of rain yesterday, and they're kind of wet looking, but they were slicked, and they're like bright orange, like this yep, cup, right? Yep. And I'm like, you guys are beautiful, right? Like yep, you're all perfect and pretty. I will say this, there's been a couple people that have posted pictures of fawns over the years, from like, they're like true South Texas blood stuff, and they're freaking gorgeous fawns. Absolutely. Like they got those crazy eyes and this like silver coat, and you're like, that's wild looking. I would love
dark to have black somebody. Foreheads.
Yeah. They're just really neat markings. But I can't have 110 pound mature does.
Yeah, I absolutely. We're talking 180.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. It's that's kind of like I tried to say, look, I want, if I have like averages on my herd, I want 4-year-olds or better to be over 170 pounds.
Absolutely.
And it helps because like, well, more like it's colder where you are than I am, but it gets cold.
Yep.
Like they don't do good.
No,
like they need hair that's that long. And they, yeah, like when you cut them open on the back, like they need 2.5 inches of fat.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm sure your wild deer are very similar to, you know, what's going on in your pastures, but like when you guys are out hunting, like when you get into some of those deer you kill there, they're big animals, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, most of the time, a 3-year-old buck in the wild, he's running 180, yeah, 200, yep, you know what I mean? And that's, he's not on the protein either. You know, right. He's foraging for himself. I mean, most of the time our does, our free range does are, you know, they're running that 140 to 160.
Yeah. That's awesome.
I mean, they're big bodied animals and they still hide on us.
Yeah. So before we move away from the genetics, tell us about your fawning. How that's been going. Obviously we've been getting some fawns here over a couple weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that's been like great. You know, my AI was the best I've had it. You know, I used a number of different bucks from my high end stuff to the double marker GEBVs. I'm running about a third of my herd under AI and the other 2/3 under live cover. I do expose some doe fawns. I take the mindset, if I'm feeding them, they might as well produce. Yep. So I've got, as of this morning, I think I have 53 on the ground right now. Mm-hmm. Not a whole lot left.
Yeah.
So I do some cycling for, some of the live breds too, just kind of trying to get them all out on the I found in the following fall, it really helps, whether it's my AI conception or the rebound of the doe's body to do that.
Walk us through what cycling does up for live cover looks like for you.
Yeah. So essentially I group them, you know, when I wean, I already know my AI plan. It sounds a little crazy, but most of the time by the end of August, I know who's getting what buck and what pens they're all going into. I'm very specific on that because stress plays a role. That's a huge factor in conception. So by then I already know who my live covers are, what pen each girl's going into. And essentially I'm syncing them just like AI. You know, they're coming in, they're getting the cedar 14 days later. I'm pulling it and I'm giving them the sync shot and turning them right in with the buck. And normally when I do that, I'm giving a handful to each buck. And so I'll generally break it up by 2 or 3 days. You know, I might give them 2 or 3 one day and wait a couple and give them a next. But, you know, I think it really helps my buck's antler growth too. You know, he's specifically breeding at this time and he's not chasing for 3-4 weeks and not eating. So it seems to work out really well.
There's not like a prolonged breeding season then.
Exactly. Yep. Yep. And makes then sense. By the end of November, he's laying around and back to the feed trough.
Gotcha. So do you take those breeders out then, or do you move the does, or what do you do?
Nope. Most of the time I leave them in. I set my farm up a little bit different. I have pens that I fawn in, but they're also specific for breeding. So they're 1 acre pens, and I have a divider right down the center of them with a gate at the end. And so what I'll do is I'll have a buck on one side with a couple girls he's live breeding, and AI girls on the other. And, you know, 14, 16, 17 days post AI, I flip the gate open and they're all mixed together in case someone needs to be backed up. And I've found most of the time that my AI conception has been wonderful. And I think it's because those animals are already next to each other for, you know, 2 or 3 months. They're kind of used to it. They're not together, obviously. But I think it kind of helps, you know, reduce stress and, you know, bucks not getting darted and put in there kind of thing. I think that's helped play a role for me too.
Gotcha. I'm gonna put you on the spot.
Yep.
So yeah, I had a doe fawn yesterday. It's day 207. She was AI'd. She had triplets and they're big. AI or not?
When'd you put the backup in?
14 days.
So the backup, they'd probably be the low 190s.
It's like probably 190 on the dot.
DNA.
Yeah, right. Okay. So you're copping out.
I had one the other day that was 205, and I've been looking at her and I'm like, there's no way she did not. 205, she finally gave them up. But DNA will tell. We'll run the genotypes and the GBVs later on and see. Fingers crossed.
I punched all the ears this morning, and
Easy. I've been getting some of the guys over here, you know, just because you do it when they're born. You put the ear tag through the same hole. You don't have, you know, a deer that's got a bunch of ear holes and all that. So
yeah, I didn't use the TSU tagger, and for those that don't know what that is, just you can look at AllFlex, and it's a tissue sample unit. They have a specific tagger that has a little like a vial and then a cutter on the other side, and it punches it's an ear punch, and it puts the tissue sample into the little vial, which has rubbing alcohol, is barcoded, and is the best form and way to submit DNA to the laboratory for NADAR, like by far.
Yeah.
So if you can, like, don't pull hair, if you don't have to, like, don't do antler cores, like, just use the TSU unit. Obviously can't do it on animals that are dead, but, you know, like, and not around anymore, but like, it, you definitely can do it on live animals. And I think for the fawns, it's pretty slick.
Yeah.
Like, I just alcohol my ear up and I punch it, and then the tag goes right in behind it. And, they seem to be like it. I like it.
Even it comes down to, you know, you got great tag placement too. We've all seen it, tags in goofy spots and you can't read them. And this just allows you to make sure it's in the perfect spot and going to be visible.
Yeah. It's funny you said that, 'cause like, I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, you know, all my tag placement is like right between the two veins, like kind of perfect in the middle. 'Cause tags were hard to come by this year. And I think I ordered mine in, I want to say March, and I had to buy them on Amazon.
Yeah.
And I couldn't get my AllFlex tag. So I had to switch brands. So I'm using the Ytex this year, and I'm using, like, I didn't want to use the tiny little button tags.
Yo.
I got the big ass cattle tags that are like three inches in these little tiny fawn's ears, but like, tag placement's been good, but tags. Yeah.
Oh,
I thought I was ordering early.
I ordered mine in February, and fawning rolled around and I still didn't have them. And I called up AJ Lusk, who he's making tags for everybody. And I'll tell you what, those tags are awesome.
Are they? He does the laser engraving, right?
Yep, exactly. Nice. Yeah. And they look great. You know, I always had the trouble of what color am I using next and what's going to be visible when it's got mud on it. And these tags are perfect. You know, I've got them where they're red and blue background and white lettering on them, and even puts the logo on them. And I didn't have to wait 12 weeks.
Yeah, that's nutty. I'd never thought tags be in such a shortage. Just a quick point on the TSU units is, yes, they cost money. Yes, they're, depending where you get them, $2.56 to $3 a piece. You get $3 of credit when you submit them to NADAR. So you get all your money back for the tubes. So the tubes are free. All you have to do is buy the applicator. The applicator will work thousands of times. So like, it's just a no-brainer. Use the
super handy.
Yeah, I really like it. And we punched some adults, like a bunch of adults this past fall when we were handling them, and like works great on the big deer too, not just the fawns. And I noticed that I did my buck fawns, my now yearlings, my yearlings that are growing now. I did them as fawns when I weaned them in the fall, and the holes are gone.
Really?
Yep. So, cause I didn't put tags in those ears when I followed up. But yeah, those holes, at least from like me looking at them with binocs at, you know, 20 yards, I can't see a hole.
Oh, that's
which is
awesome.
Pretty neat.
So, yeah.
I noticed that all the adult, you know, I got some like 9 and 10 year old does. They all still have a big hole in there.
Yep. I noticed that on mine too.
Yeah. So fawning's good. Awesome AI. What do you got lined up for this coming fall as far as bucks outside of like some new great buck that has the look and the values? Like,
yeah, I've got some off for testing right now. You know, Wisconsin had the GEBV project or the genomics project. And so I've sent in my entire yearling class. I have some of my older bucks already done. I've got one I'm keeping my eye on right now. He's Blackjack FedEx over Outlaw's Mom. Cool. So that would be Blackjack FedEx Jumbo Danger Hardcore.
That's your pedigree.
Yeah. So I'll be very.
He's a yearling, right?
Let's see. What's that?
He's a yearling.
Yep. He's a 1 year old. Yep. I've got a number of other up and coming Blackjack sons, some Landmark, some Major League, and then a lot of my own stuff. You know, I put together some combinations I'm pretty excited about. We'll see what they do with age. I've got a Bad Company 2 year old that's framed up very well. So.
Yeah, it's so neat. You're just,
hopefully he keeps it up. But,
yeah, it's kind of cool. Like this time of year, they're just most of the 2 year olds are kind of, you know, they're at least mine are my humble deer. You know, they're out to their ears.
Yeah,
they got it or further. G2s are coming on, and you can start to see that kind of shape rolling in. Of course, if you want to be very disappointed in your own deer, just go on like Whitetails Unlimited and look at some of the deer that people are posting, and you're like, well, I don't have any deer that look like that.
Yeah. Time for all new does, right?
Yeah, it's so funny because like, yes,
that's why I don't share anything yet, because I know the second I do, he'll be in the fence or, you know, doing something wild.
Yeah, that's always a death sentence or a jinx on somebody.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. They want to see him. They got to come stop out.
Yeah, no, that's it. It's you know, farm tours are, it's a great way to chat with people and meet with people. And I know like there's not as much of that anymore state to state. Heck, I don't think anybody's going to be able to afford to drive your place from anywhere but your local town with $6 and $7 gas prices. But the farm tours are great, you know?
Yeah. And it's just learning, you know. That's even, well, you and I, we've been doing this a long time, and I'm always, how can I get better? What can I do new?
Well, you have to.
Yep.
You have to. And like, if you're not looking outside yourself, you know, you're going to keep repeating the same mistakes. you know, it's cool to have like a group of guys that you can chat with on a regular basis and just bounce some stuff off. And even in the topic or the, you know, the conversations that you have, you get to learn stuff that other people are doing. Cause like there's other ways to do stuff. And like, you don't maybe necessarily adopt that in whole, but you can adopt parts of it. And like, you really get your program dialed in.
Absolutely.
All right. So you had, I'm going to shift into, Whitetails of Wisconsin, which I understand you're the president, you're the guy over there.
Yeah.
Do you guys have terms? How do you do that?
Yeah. Yep. The president is, you know, our board member, we're a 3-year term. And then, every year after the banquet's over, we elect new officials. So I've been the lucky guy staying president. I think this is my 3rd year or 4th year, one of the two. Yep. Blurs.
Yeah, we're the same, right? 3-year terms, and then the board votes and the executive team. So, yep, I understand. You had mentioned the grant funding, and for those that don't know, I'll add a little bit of context to that, and then Ryan can kind of walk you through what they have going on in Wisconsin. But the USDA has these cooperative agreements, and the state departments of wildlife or conservation or DNRs or whatever you have in your state, as well as Department of Agriculture, can apply for this funding for a variety of purposes. And USDA gives some guidelines and outlines what that looks like. So CWD research, CWD management, CWD communication, so on and so forth. And I know that Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan all applied for similar programs that they put together. And basically it's a you know, roughly speaking, it's for CWD research. Why don't you walk us through what kind of the overview is in Wisconsin and how you think that that's going to be helpful for like the WOW members out there.
Yeah. Yeah. So, how Wisconsin was set up was, the first phase, which started in January, Department of Ag reached out to all the producers. We had to submit an application if we were interested. You know, they essentially make sure your license is in good standing, and then they're looking at your census, and they were giving each farm a certain percentage of samples based on how many animals you had. So I, first round, I ended up with around 30 or so. We had a few issues with it, which each state does, you know, with different things. We've worked through most of it, but you got to live with some of it too. I want to say we roughly were allowed 2,700 samples. Wisconsin set it up so that the entire test was covered. So, you know, we were getting GEBVs, genotypes, and parentage for any animal we sent in, which is fantastic. You know, it allowed a lot of us to catch up on pedigrees.
Yep.
And then get those other values that we needed. Unfortunately, breeding had already passed, but for this next season, it leads us into that and who we keep, who we cull. I'm not sure how many samples we have left. We're in phase two right now, which they opened it up to really, you could ask or request as many samples as you wanted, and they either approved or denied, which was fantastic. So we'll see where it leads. I know a lot of breeders are keeping all of that stuff in mind. We have to, especially here. I mean, it's literally all over the place around us, CWD that is. And so doing these tests are huge. And, you know, WOW has been instrumental in helping the state. You know, we kind of helped form the program with them. They took some of our advice, other parts they didn't. Like we have to have a vet on site when we're punching samples. They have to be reading tags and all that. But on my farm, I essentially have everybody done except for my 2-year-old bucks. And I haven't handled them. Once I wean my buck fawns, bucks don't come back in the barn. And yep. So that's where I haven't got samples on them, but you know, have the rest of them. That's huge. And it's going to, I think, you know, really lead our industry forward. I'm hoping, very hopeful, we could get a second phase of this project. You know, really for us, I think it's huge. It would be huge to learn to see, okay, here's mom and dad, here are their values. Where are the offspring at? Who do we want to keep right now? And who do we want to move off? I don't know if that'll happen. We've had some changes here in Wisconsin as far as our program heads, but I've got to be optimistic. So,
yeah, that's interesting. So most of the CWD is kind of in the southern central tier of the state, right?
Yeah, southwest.
Not too much in the north?
You know, I think Wisconsin has 72 counties. As of this last spring, I want to say 60 or 61 are affected in some way, which they consider that if there is a positive within 10 miles of a county border, that next county becomes affected. So not every county has a CWD in it, but that southwest region of the state, they call the endemic four counties. It's 30-40% of the wild deer down there have it. And so, and it jumps the fence there all the time. We had double fence programs there that were getting it. And
You say, just to be clear, just for anybody that's listening, he doesn't literally mean that deer are jumping in the fence, correct, or jumping out. It went from the outside environment to the inside environment. I don't want somebody clipping a sound.
No. Whether it was feed stuff or, you know, birds.
Sure. Having fully funded testing is really a no brainer, right? Because when you're handling your animals in the fall and or spring for a health program or for artificial insemination or to wean fawns or however you do your stuff, you're hands on. So you schedule it out with the vet, or if you can coincide with TB testing or whatever that is, right? That's with that full spectrum of testing, you know, it's a $92 kind of deal, right? That's significant, right? Especially for a producer and the value you get back from those tests. You can choose to use it or not.
Yep.
But like, you know, right? And it's cool.
Huge, you know, because Wisconsin, you know, last few years, just individually, we've all invested a ton of money in the genotypes. And, you know, you and I talked last summer and you're like, hey, I think I'm going to propose this to our state. And I turned around and I went to our state and I said, hey, you guys got to look at this. I said, producers can't keep footing the bill for this. We're trying to move forward, but we need some help. And I was very thankful Dr. Horn here in Wisconsin, you know, went forward with she included us, you know, in putting the program together, and it's going to lead the industry for us.
Yeah, no question. And I think long-term, you know, if you're objective about, you know, the idea that chronic wasting disease needs to be dealt with, whether you're a deer farmer or a wildlife official, you know, whatever that is, it's a good thing for the farmers to test their animals. Like science says, right? And like, it's not like one obscure little paper. It's multiple papers now with very concurrent, like well done science that prevalence rates will decrease. We will have lower susceptibility to the disease. That's a win for everyone.
Yep.
So everybody should be supporting it. And, you know, I'm glad Wisconsin's, you know, leading the way on that testing.
Yeah. I mean, and it goes back to what we talked about before, the more information and learning we can do, the better off our industry is going to be.
Yeah. I still struggle with it. You know, I stare at my small little group of animals I have, and I'm like, okay, so I got values here. I got offspring out of this. Who do I breed with? Like, this one's a GG. I got to work on that. Like, you know, and it's hard.
Absolutely.
It's hard.
And that's, you know, most of us, our herds are 70, 80% GGs. And that was really my AI focus this last fall was, okay, they got to have 1S at least, if not 2, and negative value GEBV is a bonus on top of that, and yep, how can we move forward. And that's same with all my backup bucks. They all had at least 1S and they all had a negative value. And it's just, it's moving in that direction. I don't think you have to jump out and do it all right away or try to. It never works with deer doing that. But you know, it's starting the process. And I wanted to get some of these markers into my girls I consider good producers. So it was time.
Yeah. No. Well said. I took a little bit more aggressive approach, but similar, right? I disregarded my breeding population and I just bred all my does to the same buck that was the best I could. That was an SS, right?
Yep.
And, said, I'm just going to work with what I have this year, see what I got. And guess what? I got like, I don't know. I should actually look. I for sure have 80% doe fawns, which I'm not tickled about, but like, I have a ton of what should be negative value, either GS or SS fawns, does, right? So like, I mean, I got more doe fawns this year than my entire breeding herd. Of course, when you get like 6 sets of triplets, a set of quints and 1 single, like that's what happens.
Yep.
Not bragging. I just got triplets everywhere. So I know that WOW's been working on CWD obviously for a long time, and over those years, you guys have funded a ton of different initiatives. I know you're always looking for places that you can allocate capital that you think will have meaningful impact, whether that be directly on your producers or to the, you know, CWD science world. Can you talk about a couple of those projects that you guys currently have?
Yeah. So one of our major projects the last couple of years has been at Apple Creek Whitetails, which is a positive facility. We were able to rectal test a number of animals at the facility. We identified, I believe it was 20 positives out of the gate. A handful were bucks, and then the rest were all adult females. All were either GGs or GSs. And what we did is we split these animals up, and then we took double marker animals, rectal tested them to make sure they were non-detected, and then have put them in those pens, getting bred by positive bucks. And then we're kind of comparing the offspring, you know, years down the line, doing blood testing on them. So far, and I don't have the GEB values on them right here in front of me, but so far the double marker animals under 2.5-3 years of exposure are still non-detected, which is fantastic. You know, yep, it's giving us something to go on. And WOW is extremely motivated with research. You know, our big saying in 2018, our governor kind of came at us, and we led the way with, we aren't the problem, we're the solution. And doing this research, we feel, you know, is us being the solution. We have the animals, we have the ability, where can we get with it? So we're doing that project. We've been doing that for 2 or 3 years now. They just actually took some samples again here this last spring, and I think we're waiting for those test results to come back yet. Should have them shortly. And then we're doing some research at Maple Hill Whitetails, Lori Seal's place. We're doing blood work. We're looking at genotypes and GEBVs. And that's just in the infancy so far. But we should have some harder results, you know, come this fall. So it's really interesting to see, you know, how this disease works, how it spreads, just the factors involved in it that, you know, it doesn't make any sense, but can we put the pieces together to try and figure out, you know, okay, this is how it got here. This is what we need to do to stop it. So that's really our motivation with it.
Yeah, it's I I try to, well, I have to follow this stuff because I, you know, my livelihood depends on it, right? Like if CWD becomes, you know, I guess a bigger issue or, you know, puts me out of business, like that's poo poo on me, right? Like I want to stay up on it, but it's also important to remember, that because of the nature of these prion diseases, stuff takes time.
Yep.
And like, you know, like everybody's like, hey, we got results from this and, you know, we can speculate what that means, but like it takes time. Right.
Yeah.
And as we work through these kind of incubation periods, and now we've been focusing a ton on genetics, obviously in, you know, multiple aspects, it's stuff's coming together. And I like to say, like, the science is for sure moving faster than the regulatory environment.
But, absolutely.
But like, that's a good thing, right? Because like, we don't need permission to implement the science.
Yep.
We can just get after it.
And that's a lot of it. You know, we just got tired over here of being roadblocked. You know, we're trying to do science and there, you know, all the excuses under the sun that we're given. And, you know, our thing is it keeps spreading in the wild, you know, 50,000 positives walking around in Wisconsin right now. And all we're doing is cutting heads off, testing them and saying, oh, here's another dot on the map. That's not doing us any good. Nope. And as farmers, it's something, you know, we love these animals, plain and simple. And that's why we're doing it. And if we can save someone else's herd, you know, unfortunately we're losing herds, but these producers care enough to stick around and fight. And that's really what makes Wisconsin strong. Our membership is just fantastic. We're always there for anybody. They don't even have to be in our state. You know, that's something I've helped people in the Dakotas and in Iowa and all of that. And yep. You know, PA does a wonderful job with it too.
Thank you.
You know, and we're only as strong as our membership.
Yeah, that's right. And it's good to hear that you have that member support. And I, like, I'm a member of WOW because I appreciate all the different aspects of stuff you guys do. And I know that if, you know, my little membership fee can keep you guys in business and keep you, you know, doing different funding initiatives and keeping farms in Wisconsin alive, you know, down the road, maybe long-term, I can do business in Wisconsin again.
Absolutely. Right?
Cause that I don't do business in Wisconsin anymore.
No,
I can't.
No.
Like I used to spend some money up there.
Yeah.
Not anymore. They don't want my money. Not you guys, the government. They don't want my money.
No, that's just it, you know, and we've got a lot of stuff we need some changes on over here, you know, as far as regulation, but we need a different political climate as well.
Yeah. So, well,
I
think this fall is going to be good for farmers generally. Yep. I also think that through our scientific advancements and, you know, some of the projects that we were talking about, that implementing that science through what we do best, and that's breeding deer, will ultimately just make the regulatory environment more obsolete.
Yeah.
And because you and I both know, like, fighting and anybody who says differently is wrong or they've never done it. Fighting the government is really, really, really hard.
Absolutely.
We have a better opportunity fighting this disease that everybody says is not curable or uncurable or whatever than we do having, like, fighting the government.
Yeah.
So let's, you know, people are going to be like, oh my gosh, he said it. Let's just work within the government framework. Yes, we might not like it. And yes, we need to continue to work at chipping that away. But like, the framework's there. CWD is not going away on the government side of things. That regulatory environment is as solid as it's going to be. You're not going to go in and be like, oh, you got to take this program away. Not happening. But I promise you, if you don't have positives on your farm, that CWD environment is going to start to melt, that regulatory environment. And that's what we need to do. So kudos to WOW for leading the way on a lot of that stuff. Before we go, because I am conscious of our time, I want to chat with you about Mainframe magazine, and talk to me a little bit about that. I know it's a big shifting gears away from
CWD,
but tell me.
2016, we did our first edition. I own it with Ben Rise here in Wisconsin. And really our goal with that is we want to get it in the hands of everybody we possibly can that's deer farming. Last fall, we mailed about 5,000 copies. So any of the listeners that aren't on the mailing list, let me know. We mail it for free. We're doing 100 pages, sometimes up to 108 or 116 pages all across the U.S., running it at the highest quality we possibly can. And our goal is to make those advertising sales. And one of the hardest things in the deer industry that I find is talking to people about sales. They don't think an ad is successful if they're not selling semen. Hmm. And it's one of the biggest talks I have with people. And I ask them, have you sold any bred does to that buck? Oh yeah. What about fawns? Yep. Okay. Well, that's your advertising. And it takes years, you gotta build up a name. You gotta build up a program. And I've been very blessed. I'm addicted to pedigrees and deer. And I mean, you can ask me stuff about them. I have guys, they'll send me pedigrees and I'll pick a doe way down 5-6 generations back and I'll know what she produced, and they think I'm nuts, but
it's good to be nuts.
I'm obsessed with the genetics and the pedigrees of it. And so, we'll be coming out with another issue here this fall. We do it once a year. We normally start, taking ads, end of June, early July. And then we start, building the magazine, early to mid August, and it's generally in mailboxes starting in mid September. So getting it out in time for breeding.
It's a pedigree book.
Yep.
So like you do run ad pages, right? Cause you obviously want to monetize some stuff. And I can attest to the fact that like the print quality is like superb, right? Like it's not some newspaper cheap glossy magazine.
Yeah. And that's, we nice. Spend a little bit more on our end. We make a little bit less to keep that quality up. You know, we do little things. We put it in a plastic envelope so that way there's not a label on, someone's ad on the front or back cover, little stuff like that. And we do a lot of the design too, so when people look at it, we call it our standard mainframe ad. It's got mainframe on the top. There's two pictures of your buck, the pedigree, any information, logo. And that's all included in the price along with mailing. And it's a pretty good deal when you look at some of the other, auction books and all that for what you're paying for them. We're including design, and then you get to use the ad later on. So it's not a one-time thing. You get right. The ad. You can use it for your social media or in your state book. So
nice. So once a year, and you say that you ship it prior to breeding season, right?
Yep. So we build the magazine in early August. That's when we need all the materials, pictures and pedigrees and stuff like that. And then we are at the printer the first Tuesday of September.
Okay.
So it takes roughly about 2 weeks to print and package, and then it's in the mail. And funny how the mailing system works. I have people in Texas that get it before me, and I'm in the same state it's made in, but hey.
Well, that's good. At least it's getting out to folks.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's really, and like I said, if there's someone that isn't on the list, let me know. We'll add you. That's our goal. We want to have everybody we possibly can.
Awesome. So if it's okay, I'd like to just include your email address under there. That way, if anyone wants to get a hold of you, talk WoW, absolutely, talk deer, talk mainframe, they can do that. We'll get a couple of those bucks pictured that we were talking about earlier to tickle anybody's fancy. Anything else before we wrap up?
No, I'm just excited for deer farming this year. Our market over here is wonderful. I wish I had another 20 bucks and another 30 does because they'd be sold. I mean, the market is so strong, and I hope our membership knows it. I hope all the adjoining states do too. It's a wonderful change. We're always, like we've talked, we're always dealing with CWD, but when you have a market like this, it really makes deer farming enjoyable.
Awesome. I'm not going to add anything to that. Great words to end on. So perfect. Appreciate.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
It's always good to talk to you. We haven't talked in a while, so I appreciate it. Thanks for coming on. And as always, folks, stay tuned for another episode of North American Deer Talk.